Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, rudely interrupting my dear friend Gregory Coppoli, Defense and Foreign Affairs, as he was explaining the declining revenues flowing into the oil-rich and blessed land of Nigeria, the most populous state in all of Africa, a dominant player when and if the leadership matches the people and the resources. This is light, sweet crude, the best stuff there is. And now we have a headline from Reuters that they're limiting sales of electricity to outside of the country, which could mean just neighboring countries, because of domestic supply concerns, which is usually associated with declining nations without revenue. Gregor was explaining that the oil is not flowing the way it used to because the price of oil, Brent crude and West Texas, is extremely high. So please continue, Gregory. Beg pardon for interrupting.
No problem. Well, Nigeria is now getting its own oil refineries so that it will no longer have to import all of its refined petroleum. It will go straight from Nigerian production into Nigerian refineries and then into electricity generation, and as well as, of course, motive fuel for the trucking and automobile industry population of Nigeria. The infrastructure for electricity has always been patchy. And we remember some 20, 30 years ago when the telephone network basically collapsed. It was so old and broken down that it collapsed and it was never replaced. That would have cost billions and billions at the time. And instead, we saw the immediate replacement of the landline system in Nigeria with cell phones. And all of a sudden, Nigeria had the highest per capita use of cell phones, I think, in the world, all around the country as entrepreneurs set up cell towers and the like. So we've got other people in Nigeria starting to get entrepreneurial about infrastructure. We're also seeing the government itself totally disorganized and making lots of mistakes. The government said just a week or two ago that it had done a deal with Maersk, the great shipping company, to inject $600 million into Nigeria's seaport infrastructure. However, that was immediately contradicted by Maersk itself, and the government took down the post on which it had on X about this, and basically now denies that it was ever said. But they've really got their messaging in a mess. At the same time, it did highlight the fact that Nigeria's ports are also themselves falling apart. The costs at the main ports, such as Apapa port in Lagos, are, you know, five times higher than in Durban, South Africa. They're three times higher than in Timor, Ghana. So you've got all of these infrastructure collapses occurring at the same time, largely because of the extensive corruption, which has prevented reinvestment in infrastructure, which has driven away the foreign oil majors and the like. And you've only got a few domestic entrepreneurs who are trying to hold things together. And in fact, that may well work, because what we've seen is that this giant economy of Nigeria, the largest economy in Africa, functions without any reference to the government. By and large, people just go on, get on about their business without reference to government regulations and the like. However, when it comes to highways and railways and so on, you do need, of course, a lot of government involvement. And the major programs, the big highway infrastructure, which was to go along the coast from the deep south up into the northern coastal regions, that's probably going to run out of cash before it gets halfway completed. New Chinese railway lines, which were sort of meant to take iron ore into local steel smelting, they are basically being held up, I think largely because of lack of Chinese money as well as Nigerian money. But it's really not going well there. And meanwhile, of course, the Nigerian population is suffering dreadfully. The cost of staples has gone up through the roof, and with an already impoverished population, we saw in the past 12 months, we've seen a cost of a bag of rice increase by 78.3%, for example. A box of pasta, which you'd get at a supermarket, gone up by 81% in the last year. Chickens have gone up 54% in the last year. Tinned tomatoes up by 54%. Vegetable oil, another major staple there, up by 55.7%. And worst of all, you've got the price of Coca-Cola in the last year went up by 100%. Oh, and even worse than that, I guess, the price of Guinness Stout went up by 114%. So everything is really hitting the consumers. And this is, you've got one of the most pliable and tolerant populations in the world there in Nigeria, across all of the ethnic spectrum. They put up with a lot of this, but you have to ask how much longer they're going to continue to do so. At the same time, in various parts of the north, we're seeing a resurgence of the Islamist terrorism. We saw Islamic State West Africa, I think in the last couple of days, killed about 25 young people from the local self-defense unit. So the war is going on unremittingly at the same time as the U.S. has been forced to pull its forces. It had about 1,000 or more forces in Niger, neighboring to Nigeria, and it's had to pull them out in the past couple of weeks as well. So we can expect to see a ramp up of unrest along with the continued growth of inflation, and along with the continued disorganization within the government of Bola Tinubu. So it doesn't augur well there. I'll be in London in a week meeting with some senior Nigerians to get a better handle on this. Right now, I've been advised not to go down there for a while. So because of our reporting on the situation. But it's not a healthy situation there. And we're seeing Africa being left to its own devices, whether it's Ethiopia or Egypt or Nigeria, or for that matter, South Africa, where the country is absolutely falling apart.
However, there is strong interest from one particular European nation. That would be Russia. And I go to the Russian news from Moscow. Vladimir Putin inaugurated for a fifth term as president in a ceremony filled with pageantry and a televised church service, as the Russian leader tried once more to depict his invasion of Ukraine as a religiously righteous mission that is part of our 1,000-year history. This is the New York Times reporting. So what I want to mention is that I talk to Moscow every other week to a young correspondent there, a Russian national, who is a young person, very well educated, clearly has the English and several other languages. And what I've learned is that the Russian people regard Vladimir Putin as a success. The success is because the absence of Western firms and franchises and entrepreneurs that have left because of the sanctions have meant, and this is the opinion, not I'm not giving statistics, the opinion of a young person, a very well-informed young person, that has allowed Russian entrepreneurs to get involved in rebuilding the franchises, Starbucks and whatnot, the fast food, but also they've gone to a full defense economy, a war economy, everything for the front. And the growth has defied expectations of sanctions. So right now, Russia's running hot. And there will be a price to pay whenever you go to a war economy, but not right now. Your measure of Vladimir Putin as he takes his fifth term, is he in charge of a success, or is he holding on with his fingernails and the future is grim?
No, he's going extremely well. I think there would not be one Western leader who wouldn't envy or give their eye teeth for the kind of popularity rating that he has with his electorate. This is because the the Russian and related electorates do behave differently from Western electorates, and they do like a strong leader. I would believe that Russia is not yet at a full war economy. Quite the contrary, I think it's at a much more self-reliant economy. I think we're seeing much of the West going to command economies where the government controls more and more of the power of the economy at the street level. You've got, you know, we remember the old comments during the presidential campaigns here a few decades ago, where one candidate said 48% of the U.S. population was in some way dependent on government handouts. Well, that is more or less a command economy when you've got population so dependent on the government and you've got a high degree of government employment or government handouts. I don't think you have that level in Russia. Russia is actually getting to be a much, as you say, much more entrepreneurial economy. Putin is relatively secure as far as you can be. Of course, his age is going to, at some stage, be a factor. But he will probably serve a longer term in office than Joseph Stalin did under the Soviet Union. So this is quite an accomplishment. His comments when he was inaugurated today were fairly confident. He said that if he's prepared to talk peace with the West, but only on terms of equality. Now, this is something which Washington regards as an affront. How dare the Russian president say that he can talk to us in terms of equality? But the reality is that Putin is in a strong enough position to make that kind of claim. What else is going to happen? Yes, the West could threaten nuclear conflict, which it has done during this last 2 years of the Ukraine war. Putin has responded in kind, but the reality is that, you know, he is holding a lot of the cards. Everyone is talking in the West about how the Ukrainians can defeat the Russians. And yet every day we see the Russian forces taking more and more land away from Western Ukrainian forces. So really, Putin is in a very, very strong position. And as we segued from Africa, it's worth pointing out that Russia, although fighting a war in Ukraine, has just deployed a significant number of troops to Burkina Faso, the African country of Burkina Faso, the former Upper Volta, to help with their war against the Islamists there. So basically, Putin is not forced into a corner. His economy is not doing badly. They're building their gold reserves dramatically. And when, for example, Russia had this great dispute with Turkey over the shooting down of a Russian fighter in northern Syria, Russia basically banned the importation of Turkish high-value vegetables and fruits and so on, which basically punished the Turkish economy for shooting down that Russian fighter. At the same time, that was the first real bout of entrepreneurial activity in Russia in the agricultural sector. We saw a great resurgence of Russian production of high-value fruits and vegetables, replacing what had formerly been imported from Turkey and the European Union. We now see Russia as one of the most significant exporters of grains in the world. So this is a very impressive situation. And yes, we can say, even if we only half believe a lot of the Ukrainian claims about how many Russian fighters and tanks they've destroyed, nonetheless, Russia prevails. So we're going to have to get used to that reality and start dealing with Putin on a more realistic basis than we have done in the past.
And Gregory, right now, the measure of the Russian people is also on the popularity polls, but it's also the fact that Russia is allied with Tehran, with Beijing, and to a certain extent with Pyongyang, although that is very difficult to discern. Does that help Putin to have alliances with other troubled nations? I'd say Beijing is very troubled. Tehran unknown, but it can't be strong. Does that help him?
Well, what country is not troubled at the moment, including the United States, including Australia, Britain, France, and so on? The interesting thing is that that Putin at his inauguration today, re-inauguration, had the French representatives there for that event, whereas most of the EU and the US and so on boycotted it. Right. Yes, he needs to have that alliance with his neighbors. He's aware of their weaknesses, and the weaknesses play into his hands. The Iranian clerics absolutely need him, which is why they signed the deal to join the International North-South Transport Corridor, which gives Moscow right. control of the great route from the Atlantic down into the Indian Ocean.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We have to have room for the King Charles Report because there's good news for the king, it's good news for the prince, and there's good news for the whole coronation, for the whole family remembering the coronation. This is CBS Eye on the World with Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.